We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that.
It's embarrassing, but we are who we are. We're not a very good team, but we're 3-1 somehow, and we got all the voters fooled, thinking we're pretty good.
Jaworski Lane at 275 pounds showed a heck of a lot of athletic ability.
Welcome to a Week 12 preview edition of the RotoWire College Football Podcast, the Noel Devine of College Football Podcasts. I'm joined, as always, by RotoWire head honcho of college football content, John McKechnie. John, if I remember correctly, Noel Devine at one point was like pseudo-adopted by Deion Sanders. I think he became his legal guardian for a very short period of time. Am I completely making that up?
Oh my God, I actually didn't know that at all. So that's incredible, but you know, like, that it's just an amazing thing to say about Noel Devine, where like you're so cool that Deion just like literally adopts you. Like your play right. style is so like so fast and just like flashy that Deion Sanders literally wants to like take care of you.
So I'm on his Wikipedia right now. He most recently played for the Edmonton Eskimos. I assume that's a CFL team. Although in 2019, he helped guide the West Virginia Rough Riders of the AAL to the championship that year. He currently owns and operates Devine Speed LLC, a speed training business where he trains young athletes at all levels. So if you were wondering what the highest rated recruit in West Virginia history is up to, there's your answer.
Well, you know, if we ever find ourselves in the vicinity of the Devine complex, you know, we got to get in there and, you know, maybe shave our 40s down, you know, under 5.5 seconds or something.
Yeah. The last thing I'll mention here, I'm seeing on his page that he was undrafted, quote, because of his perceived unwillingness to block. I kind of respect that. Like, hey,
it's not perceived. I don't want to block. I'm here to score touchdowns, dude.
Yeah, I don't want there to be any confusion. I will not be blocking.
It's not in the job description.
Let's dive into week 12 here. We have a few headliner games. As you mentioned to me off air, this is basically just like a collective bye week for the SEC with a couple of exceptions. Georgia's already finished up its SEC schedule. Is it Charleston Southern this week? Is that correct?
It is Charleston Southern. Got offered free tickets this morning. Will not be attending, mostly because, you know, I got to work and whatnot, but, you know, but
it's
going to Athens is fun. You know, you don't have to twist my arm too much, but I don't know if even like free tickets would have been quite enough.
That's funny you say that, because I was also offered free tickets to the Wisconsin-Nebraska game on Saturday. And I thought about it for like 30 seconds and was like, I can't really give you a reason why I don't want to go, but I just, you know, I'd rather hang, you know, stay back and watch some of these games on TV. And that's a full day commitment. You know, it's a mid-afternoon game. You're talking, you know, getting home probably 8-9 o'clock. Just really not something I was interested in doing, which mostly, if nothing else, speaks to how washed up we are as fans.
Yeah, we are pretty washed. You know, a couple years ago, free tickets, you know, it's like the second that sentence ends, it's like, yes. But Yeah. You talk about the logistics of it. It's like, oh, I gotta drive an hour and a half, or, you know, if you stay over, you know, the next day's drive is never very fun. So yeah, no, we're on the other end of our prime as far as that goes.
Yeah. Good spot to be in though. Let's begin. We'll go game by game. We'll highlight what you should be keeping an eye on this Saturday. And I want to start with, I think what's pretty comfortably the game of the week here in week 12. And that is number 7, Michigan State going to Ohio State, currently ranked number 4 in the CFP rankings. Ohio State, this line, I believe when we talked on Tuesday, was at 21. So it's come down a little bit, but Ohio State is a 19-point favorite at home. Total in this game currently set at 68.5.
Yeah, this one, you know, it's unfortunate that we've finally made it to this week. We've been talking about this matchup, or at least teasing it for quite some time, it feels like. And now that it's here, and it is kind of like that centerpiece game of the week with the SEC context baked in, where, you know, Georgia's got Charleston Southern and, you know, South Alabama's playing Tennessee. That all, like, there are very few interesting games in the SEC. Ole Miss, you know, they're playing Vanderbilt, so that they're basically playing an FCS team. But I digress. So we're seeing a, you know, nearly 3 touchdown spread in a game between two teams that are both in the top 10 and separated by 3 spots in the college football playoff ranking. And I think it speaks to mostly how much of a mismatch the one key facet of this game really boils down to. Like, I think you can comfortably say that the Kenneth Walker will get his, and Trevion Henderson will get his, but the problem here, and I think what informs the spread this wide, is Ohio State probably has the most dangerous passing attack in college football when everything's going right. And they do have everyone back now after Garrett Wilson came back. And you look at that and you say, okay, they're at home. And you tack on the fact that Michigan State has the worst pass defense in the country. And it's like, there couldn't be a worse matchup for Michigan State, really. And the fact that it's on the road in Columbus, you know, this is a really, really tough spot for Sparty. Would it shock me if they covered that spread? No, they are, you know, number 7 in the country for a reason. But I do feel like at the end of the day, this is going to be like a pretty comfortable win for Ohio State. Even if Michigan State's able to stay within that number, I don't think that there's going to be much doubt as to who the better team is after even like one quarter.
Kind of amazing that this game is so lopsided on paper when, one, you have 2 top 7 teams, and 2, you got, we've been kind of dogging this Heisman race all year, John. You have the number 2 and number 3 in the Heisman odds right now playing in this game. CJ Stroud is currently 2-1. Walker somehow still 3-1. Bryce Young, the leader, at plus 180. Cannot emphasize enough how uninspiring this Heisman race continues to be. Like, at this point, do you even hold a ceremony?
I mean, if they do, you know, don't they usually have it at like Radio City or something?
Yes.
Like, the Radio City should book something else that night, and the Heisman ceremony has to be, I don't know my New York geography very well. Let's just say it's at like some little club in the Lower East Side or something. Instead,
even that doesn't be a little too sweaty. Does it have to even be in New York? Like, let's have it at like the Perkins
Hoboken
in Iowa.
Hoboken.
Sure. Yeah, it could be literally anywhere. It should be at like the meeting hall area in like a Hampton Inn somewhere in like the middle of the U.S.
Very, very similar to my grandfather's Hall of Fame induction into his high school's like athletic Hall of Fame. It was some hotel banquet room in a suburban Philadelphia hotel.
I'm picturing like the type of venue you would go to attend a hypnotist seminar if you're trying to quit smoking cigarettes.
It's like
very specific aesthetic.
But you guys got to be out of here by 4 because we have a Magic the Gathering tournament at 4:30, and those people are prompt.
Yes, exactly. You know, you mentioned this Ohio State offense. Like, everybody is back. You have so many playmakers. They're first in the country in yards per play, first in scoring at 46.3 points per game. And granted, a lot of those big scoring efforts have come against bad teams, and you know they played some close games early on. They're first in the country in total yards. Like, in my opinion, pretty easily the best big play team in the country. I think they have like 92, I forget what the number I read, 92, 96 plays this season of 20 or more yards. I mean, that's obscene and not that surprising if you watch the Buckeyes over these last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, I think a big key is CJ Stroud is fully healthy. Like he was playing through kind of a bum shoulder earlier this year, and he seems to be at 100% now. They obviously have had their bye week and everything. So they were obviously able to lean on the run game a decent bit while he was at less than 100%. But, you know, I think the big storyline in this offense, they had a great run game last year with Trey Sermon and Master Teague, but Trevion Henderson is just such a huge difference maker. But I think the big thing has been the emergence of the number three receiver, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Like, he took over that Nebraska game, set a Ohio State single game record for receptions in that one. And what I particularly like about him for this game, I'm going to just go ahead and assume that Gus Johnson's on the call. And he's got such a perfect name for like a long touchdown with Gus Johnson on the call, like Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Like I very much look forward to that. I will have the sound bar cranked all the way up when Ohio State's on offense, just in anticipation of Gus going nuts.
I don't even know if it needs to be a touchdown. It might just be like a 4 yard out. Smith-Njigba pushed out of bounds, suck it at six.
The man's hyped. The man's hyped at all times. We could all take notes on that.
I'm sorry. I'm like, I hate it, but I think I'm kind of anti Gus Johnson. I didn't mean to be this way. I've never really even thought about it, but like the last few games I've watched with him on the call, I'm just like, I can't take this anymore.
It's, you know, it's
exhausting.
It's not for everybody. I feel like we've talked about like Bill Walton being on calls before, you know, yeah. after he was on UCLA game day, and it's like you either love it or you hate it. It's pretty polarizing, but
right.
You know, I tend to be more in the Gus Johnson camp, but all the while fully admitting how ridiculous the games tend to be just sound wise when he's on there.
Yeah, I'm more of a Hubie Brown guy. You know, I want somebody to be like nitpicking everything the entire game. Let's move over to Iowa State, Oklahoma. This one's also in the early window. We do get Michigan State, Ohio State on ABC. So I'm not sure if Gus will be on the call. He might get the Iowa State, Oklahoma game here. This one in Norman, Oklahoma, right. 3.5 point favorites at home. 59.5 is the total. I think we kind of have to reassess a little bit on Oklahoma after last week. But at the same time, I don't necessarily feel like they played all that differently last week than they had, you know, 7 out of the last 8 weeks. They kind of finally got tripped up by an opponent that was just better than a lot of the teams that they faced through the first three quarters of their schedule.
Yeah, we had kind of circled this stretch for Oklahoma as the key one and one where at once you could look at it and say, okay, they haven't played their best ball yet, but you know, they've made the switch at quarterback and they have all the big the marquee Big 12 matchups ahead of them with you know, Iowa State has obviously fallen by the wayside and we'll get to that in a second, but you know, with Baylor, with Iowa State, with Oklahoma State, like they have their chance to go ahead and prove that they really do belong in the college football playoff. And what happened was that they ended up playing very, like you said, very similar to how they did earlier in the year, just uninspiring. I mean, that's such a low scoring game to see Oklahoma involved in. It's almost dizzying. So how they respond here, especially knowing that their odds at making the playoff now are extremely slim. It will be interesting. It's going to be a bit of a gut check. And on the other side, Iowa State, it's not the most like nationally visible program, but I think college football fans have really grown to respect what Matt Campbell has built there. And for them to go into Texas Tech last week against a guy who opened the year, I believe, as a third string quarterback and lose pretty emphatically to Texas Tech and have Texas Tech talk about how this is like a culture changing win, a program changing win. It goes to show you how far Iowa State's come to where like you can feel that way after beating them, but then also B, you know, how much Iowa State has kind of underperformed expectations this year.
Very well said. Let's bounce around to, let's head to the SEC. The only SEC game, I think, worth paying a cursory eye on this weekend, and it's still almost a 3-touchdown spread. Alabama favored by 20.5. at home against an Arkansas team that's back in the top 25. Had some nice moments early on, was a top 10 team for a while. KJ Jefferson slinging it around for Arkansas. But this feels like kind of a bounce back game for Alabama. Obviously, they had that last week against a vastly inferior New Mexico State team. Kind of the run of the mill. Like, I feel like Alabama has a 59-3 game that plays out exactly like that every single year. But now you're getting a slightly harder test, I guess, than what you've seen the last few weeks. Alabama's still trying to pad that resume, still trying to essentially just make it through these last two games against Arkansas and Auburn and set up that showdown with Georgia. Do you think they encounter much resistance here from the Razorbacks?
You know, I think the Razorbacks have been one of the best stories in college football this year, but I have a bad feeling about this one for Arkansas. This feels like a setup where Bama reminds everyone who they are, and I think that they roll Arkansas. This is, you know, Arkansas coming off like that tough emotional win in Death Valley at night. You know, I was, you know, pretty skeptical about their chances of that one, even against a bad LSU team when we were doing this pod a week ago at this time. And now they go into Tuscaloosa knowing that Bama needs to, you know, take care of business here. This sets up poorly for Arkansas. And I think as far as what you can expect game flow wise, Ole Miss basically borrowed or stole might be the better word for it. Arkansas's defense after Arkansas dominated and constantly turned over Ole Miss last year. So they run a very coverage heavy defense. They drop eight, you know, they're only rushing three or so at a time. So that is going to give Bryce Young time to pick apart the defense. But if Bama so chooses, the way that they did against Ole Miss, they can go that full bully ball route. And I know that Brian Robinson hasn't played that well, or their run game just really hasn't done a whole lot in recent weeks. But what we saw against Ole Miss, I think, could be very, very similar as far as Alabama's offensive game plan, where they just feed Robinson and Arkansas just doesn't adjust in time, and they end up just kind of getting rolled over on the ground.
Yeah, it's been a weird season for Brian Robinson and that, you know, entire rushing game. I think we have some legitimate questions about just how good that Alabama O-line is. But you mentioned that Ole Miss game. I mean, 36 carries, 171 yards, 4 touchdowns in that game. I mean, that looked like a kind of a major breakout performance for him. And you know, one, he hasn't had the workload since then. I mean, that was kind of an exception to get the Ron Dayne 36 carry game. But it just hasn't really looked the same since that game. And of course, they were tripped up, you know, shortly after. Let's go to SMU Cincinnati. This one, the Bearcats 11.5-point favorites at home. Senior day for Cincinnati. It's the last home game ever, we would think, for Desmond Ridder. We know what's at stake here for Cincinnati. You have to keep winning, obviously. And they're still in a position where it doesn't really feel to me like they control their own destiny. So, you know, of course, you need to take care of business here at home. You're at ECU next week, another game that obviously they'll be favored in. But I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Arkansas, Alabama. How much of a test should Cincinnati expect here?
I think a pretty significant one. I think on balance, I need to check back in a little bit closer on Houston now that they've crept their way into the top 25. But I would say that SMU has a pretty legit argument to be the second best team in the American Conference. And it starts with their offense. Their offense is a lot to deal with. It's explosive, it's fast moving, and it's got a lot of impressive pieces within it. Tanner Mordecai has obviously been awesome this year. He's got 37 passing touchdowns. And then you just have a litany of receivers, you know, Danny Gray, Rashee Rice, Reggie Roberson. We saw a breakout last week from Dylan Goffney. We'll see how many of those guys are healthy. I know that they did get a little bit dinged up, but they showed that they have a little bit of depth there as well. And I don't expect SMU to be able to run the ball extremely well on Cincinnati by any means, but they do have two very talented running backs in Trey Siggers and now Ulysses Bentley, who's healthy, returned to the field last week against UCF. I think SMU is going to give them all they can hope for. I wouldn't be shocked if SMU wins this game outright. I'm honestly a little bit surprised at how wide this spread is with Cincinnati giving 11.5 here, because I think that they could very well be in trouble. And I think that there's also the element here. I don't know if they just wanted to rest Jerome Ford last week in a game that they thought that they would win against USF. And obviously they took care of business down in Tampa. But if he's not right or simply unavailable, that really changes things for this Cincinnati offense. And I think they're going to have trouble scoring points if Ford is less than 100% here.
Yeah, I'm with you that the spread is, I know we try not to curse on the show. It's a little wonky, isn't it? 11.5 seems like a lot. I mean, it's been a while since Cincinnati really stepped on the throat of an opponent. I think you have to go back to the UCF game. That was a 56-21 victory. I mean, they did stomp all over Temple. But, you know, Navy gave them a run. Tulsa gave them a run a couple weeks ago. Not super impressive wins over Tulane and South Florida. Especially from a team that, you know, knows it needs to try to pad that resume as much as it can. And, you know, we're going on a month now of really fairly unimpressive victories. So I would take SMU to cover that. I think we see something similar to what we saw in that Tulsa game 2 weeks ago. Let's go to the Big 12. We got a couple games to monitor in that conference. Number 11, Baylor, going on the road at K-State. Kansas State favored by a point in that one. We're expecting a relatively low scoring game, 50 points. Is the total there. And then the nightcap on ABC. This is probably the runner-up for game of the week. We got Oregon, Utah. We've been looking forward to this one, I feel like, all season as a potential trip-up game for Oregon. My question to you is, like, is this too obvious of a trip-up game where it makes you want to zag? Like, it reminds me of Lions-Eagles in the NFL from a couple weeks ago where, like, everybody was picking the Lions, and it became so obvious that I almost felt like you had to zag. And then, of course, the Eagles win, like, 45-7.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very public line in the sense that, yeah, I mean, we've been talking about the potential of Utah beating Oregon for a couple of weeks now, and it was surprising to see the line reflect that inkling when it got released late last weekend. But I think it makes sense. This is a game that's at Utah. Utah coming off a pretty The scoreboard said it was a close-ish game, closer than it should be against a team like Arizona, but they kind of treated it as a bye week in a sense. Like they Tavian Thomas, their running back, could have played, but they opted to rest him, of course. So Utah's going to be fresh for this one, and they're obviously going to be up for it, and I think Whittingham is an excellent coach. Obviously, I have all the respect for Mario Cristobal as well and this Oregon team. So This boils down to a great matchup and one that we obviously could be seeing again in just a couple of weeks in the Pac-12 championship. So I think it comes down to the quarterbacks in this one. Can Anthony Brown go out and win a game for you? Because I think both teams have pretty strong run defenses. Oregon's a bit stronger than Utah's, but Utah's still pretty solid there. But can you Oregon make it work through the air if they need to? And you know, there's a very good chance that Utah, you know, gets a lead. We haven't seen Oregon have to come back a whole lot this year. So are they built for that? And then I think on the other side, the X factor is Utah's quarterback, Cam Rising, someone who didn't open the year as the starter. Charlie Brewer, the Baylor transfer, started out there, but Rising has taken over and has done really well. I mean, he's averaging almost 8 yards attempt, which is okay, not great or anything, but a 14-2 touchdown to interception, and he's run for over 300 yards. He's got 4 touchdowns on the ground, so he's a pretty impressive player in my opinion, and he might be one of the better quarterbacks that Oregon has faced all season. So he's going to give that Oregon defense quite a test as well. I think we're going to see a very close game. But to answer your initial question, like, is this too public? Has this like swung too far publicly in one direction to where it might be time to zag? I'm going to stick to my word here and say that Utah wins this one, but I do feel a little bit shakier on it now that like everyone seems to be on it.
Yeah, well, the line sits at Utah -3, essentially implied pick 'em at a neutral site. I'm a little surprised maybe it hasn't moved a little more in favor of in Utah's direction because everyone's talking about it. But at the same time, I mean, this is the number 3 team in the country in Oregon with obviously a ton on the line. I wouldn't say this would sew anything up by any means, because I think Oregon is liable to be tripped up just about any week. And obviously you still have the Pac-12 championship, that they're home for Oregon State to conclude their Pac-12 regular season schedule. But I mean, this feels like to me the, not the final hurdle, but the biggest hurdle the rest of the way for Oregon.
Yeah, big time. This is a game that I'm sure the committee has had circled as one that they're going to be looking at particularly closely when it comes to Oregon. Yeah. You know, that they probably haven't had this much attention on them since that UCLA game, where they were road dogs, by the way, just about a month ago. So this will be great. I'm very much looking forward to this one. That it'll be a nice little treat in the evening, especially in a week where we're not getting a ton of other like ranked action in the night window.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Cincinnati, you're hoping you take care of business against SMU, and then you're probably heading to Hooters or something for a group watch party to root for Utah in this game.
Yeah, whatever Urban Meyer's restaurant is, they're going there.
Yeah, do we ever actually get the name of that restaurant? I'm not sure I even want to know.
I'm sure it's something hilariously bad. Yeah. We'll get to the bottom of this.
Okay. Any thoughts on Baylor, Kansas State? Kansas State, a 1-point favorite again in that one.
Yeah, kind of surprising that that the line sits where it does. But I mean, the Little Apple can be a tough place to play. And Deuce Vaughn has been electric over the last month or so. I think by fantasy points scored, he's the number one running back over the last month, you know, just getting it done on the ground and as a pass catcher. So Baylor's going to need to make sure that he's accounted for every single snap. Yeah, Kansas State is just they're so tough that when they play their game, they can beat pretty much anyone just with that like physical style. I still like Baylor to come out here and win. I don't think that they're going to be in a letdown spot necessarily like the line implies. So I do like Baylor to win this one outright, but I could be a donkey on that one.
All right, where else do we have to get to in this week? I want to touch on Wisconsin, obviously, but I kind of wanted to carve out like 40 to 50 minutes at the end to discuss that game against Nebraska. I think we could probably stick in the or go back, I should say, to the Big 12 here. Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. This is the 7 p.m. Central start. This is the late Fox game in Lubbock. We got Oklahoma State at number 9, kind of on the outside looking into a potential playoff berth, depending on what happens ahead of them. But how much would you say they control their own destiny at this point?
I would say a decent bit, as long as Baylor or Oklahoma don't pick up another loss throughout the course of the regular season. And Oklahoma State, you know, runs the table these next 2 weeks, then like they would have a quality opponent to bank a win against in the Big 12 championship. I think we're still going to need some dominoes to fall in order for them to make it. And I would imagine a one-loss Notre Dame team might get the committee's lean over a one-loss Oklahoma State, even though they're Big 12 champions. But Oklahoma State, on a resume basis, maybe this is because I have some OK State friends on Twitter, and they were all up in arms after the rankings came out on Tuesday night, and you know, doing the blind resume stuff and pointing out that their resume is actually stronger than Ohio State's, that type of thing. So they definitely have that in their pocket, and they've obviously got a chip on their shoulder, not being maybe as high as they think they deserve to be. I think the quarterback play is just so uninspiring for them that maybe they get dinged for that as far as what their playoff viability would look like. But man, they got about as good of a ground game as anybody, and the defense, as weird as it is to say, is pretty nasty at Oklahoma State. So I expect them to win this one fairly comfortably, even though Texas Tech seems to have kind of bucked up down the stretch here since firing Matt Wells. But you know, at the end of the day, I still like the Pokes in this spot, even if Lubbock can be kind of a weird place to play, especially at night.
It definitely has some like, I'm speaking more from like the Michael Crabtree days, some like Mad Max vibes to like the way that some of those fans, yes, and players look. Like, it's just a kind of like a dystopian feel about like that whole stadium.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's a stadium that appears in the middle of like what basically looks like the landscape of the moon or something.
Right.
And you know, they're throwing tortillas on the field. I'm not even making that up. It's a bonkers atmosphere there. And I'm sure that, you know, with this kind of being the last huge game for Texas Tech, I believe they get Baylor next, which is always a great logo matchup, BU versus yep. TT. But, you know, this is a marquee game for Texas Tech. They'll be up for it, but I just think that Oklahoma State is the more quality team, and that'll get borne out over 60 minutes.
Unfortunately, they're at Baylor this year. So, you know, the home team's always on the right in the scoreboard. So it's going to be TT BU, unfortunately. But next year that should reverse, and we should get the golden matchup.
All right, we got that circled. Excellent.
All right, I just want to touch on Wisconsin-Nebraska real Please. Quickly. And we could do Georgia and Charleston Southern if you want. But Wisconsin still weirdly in the driver's seat in the Big Ten West. Two final hurdles, Nebraska and Minnesota in the customary Thanksgiving weekend game. Badgers are 9-point favorites at home against Nebraska. I think I said either earlier this week or last week that I'm finally back to the point of feeling comfortable saying like, oh yeah, the Badgers should be favored at home, where they were just like inexplicably favorites in like four straight games where it was very clear that they were going to lose. But they're semi back. Braylon Allen looks great. I thought Graham Mertz had probably his best game thus far last week, at least throwing the ball. Like there were like multiple throws that I was like, wow, that's the best throw he's had all year. And it was like an 8-yard slant. But that's kind of where he was starting from early on. So he's gaining confidence. I think Wisconsin offensively as a unit is starting to gain confidence. I like the cover here at home.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it says a lot, shows a lot of the evolution of this pod throughout the year that you didn't mention the Wisconsin line without prefacing it with inexplicably favored. So,
right.
So yeah, no, that goes to show how well Wisconsin's playing right now. They look exactly. like the class of the West for sure, the way that they're playing right now. So Nebraska, even if they play this one close, they are physically incapable of actually banking a marquee win. So even if this gets a little bit hairy there for a bit in the second half or anything, you still got to figure that Wisconsin pulls this one out, or Nebraska finds a way to lose in some sort of soul-crushing fashion.
Let's turn our attention to the Saturday main DFS slate. We got 14 games on a juicy DK slate for the afternoon. And we will start, as always, at the quarterback position. Highlight some guys that you're targeting, maybe some guys you're staying away from, some team totals that you're taking a look at. It's all you.
Yes. All right. So I'm very excited for this slate. It's really interesting. It's one where I think finding value at running back is going to be the key to this slate, because you really, really do have to pay up for your quarterbacks this week for the most part. I'll get to some values here in a minute. But yeah, value at quarterback is tough to find. So you're going to have to pony up for, you know, guys like Sam Hartman, Bryce Young, Kenny Pickett, and so on. And receiver, not quite as top heavy as running back here, but picking your spots at running back, maybe going mid-tier and then a lower tier guy might be the way to go about your builds. But as far as the highest implied totals, shouldn't surprise you that Ohio State tops the list, implied total north of 40. Pitt's up next, Bama, Notre Dame, Cincy, and Michigan are the top five teams in terms of implied total. As far as quarterbacks, I'm going to have a hard time, and this probably shouldn't surprise anyone based on what we were saying about this game earlier with Ohio State and Michigan State, but I think Stroud is in about as golden of a spot as he's been all year. I mean, the offense is clicking at the right time. They're at home and they're facing the worst pass defense in the country. Like that's just, it's going to be hard to stay away from Stroud this weekend. So love him. I think you could take a look at Kenny Pickett going up against Virginia. Virginia doesn't have a very good defense at all. They're a little bit worse against the run than they are against the pass, but Pitt doesn't run the ball super effectively. It's kind of the Kenny Pickett, Jordan Addison show as far as Pitt is concerned. So Pickett, 9,100, I think he makes some sense. If you want to go down a little bit further, I feel like I got to be Sean Clifford's biggest fan at this point in the country. I don't think Penn State fans like him all that much, but when he's only 6K against Rutgers and he keeps putting up pretty big numbers every week, I know last week wasn't great against Michigan, I still like this matchup. Rutgers, they smoked Indiana last week, but I think that says more about Indiana than it does about Rutgers. So I think that Penn State wins this one comfortably. And I think that Clifford has a big day, especially relative to the price tag at 6K. Not so sure about Aiden O'Connell. I can't believe that this hot streak would continue, but he's an option if you want to go a little bit lower. I am interested a little bit in DJU. I mean, he's just 5,900. Wake Forest, not a good defense. This one's at Clemson. Obviously, they don't have Justin Ross for at least this game. But if DJU is throwing it 40 times against Connecticut like he did a week ago, then, you know, we could see a pretty decent passing volume from him here on Saturday. So I like him. And then the big kind of, I don't want to say mispriced, but obvious value quarterback this week is Phil Dracovich. 4,500 of Boston College at home going up against Florida State. I think Dracovich, if the price was right, I think he'd be closer to 7K on this slate. But, you know, he returned from a wrist injury that required surgery just a couple of Fridays ago, and he's been good. So I'm surprised to see him basically as a min-priced quarterback. But that's going to be kind of a bingo free square. I imagine a lot of lineups are going to have noticed that inefficiency, but even still, getting that kind of return where you're going to see 22, 23 DraftKings points from a guy at 4,500, and you can kind of almost take that to the bank. That's going to be tough to avoid, especially, you know, given that it allows you to go really stars and scrubs with the rest of your lineup.
All right, looking at running backs. Some big names at the top: Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker, Brian Robinson, Braylon Allen, Travion Henderson. Those are your top five in terms of prices. So a lot of big time names to choose from on this slate. Three of those guys, you know, out of the Big Ten, and Walker, Allen, and Henderson. Any of those five, you know, worth paying up for?
I think they definitely can be. I don't think I'm going to have a ton of exposure to this top tier of running backs this week, just because I want to load up on the passing games for a lot of this slate. If I had to pick a favorite of this group, it's probably Brian Robinson, for the reasons I laid out earlier. I think that Bama mismatches with Arkansas as far as what Arkansas does defensively. So if it goes the way that the Ole Miss game goes, then Robinson is a total slate changer. Love Braylon Allen, of course, but I would probably drop down and go Travion Henderson for just a little bit cheaper at 8,500 compared to 86. Obviously, I was talking about some concerns with Jerome Ford, so you have to see what's up there. 8K for Kyren Williams at Notre Dame is also pretty interesting, and Hassan Haskins has been getting a ton of volume with Blake Corum being sidelined. I don't know if Michigan feels compelled to get Corum back on the field this week, given what's on the other side next week going up against Ohio State. So I could see, if that ends up being the case, then Haskins at 7,600, I think, is a pretty nice play. But I'll lay out a couple value guys that I like for this week. Kevon Lee, 3,600 of Penn State, again, going up against Rutgers. He saw his highest carry count of the season, like doubled it basically last week. So, he seems to have the trust of the Penn State offense right now. He seems to be their best and healthiest running back, seeing 20 carries a week ago against Michigan. So he's only 3,600. If you need a punt play in the flex or at one of your running back spots, I think you could do a lot worse than him. King Doru of Purdue, 4,500. That's less of a play on me thinking he's particularly good in any way, and more just like an announcement that Northwestern is still very, very bad against the run, as you, I'm sure, noticed a week ago.
I sure did.
So I think that he's the leader of that backfield. I think he would be the way to go about getting some exposure against that Northwestern run D. Izzy Abanaconda of Purdue, I'm sorry, of Pitt, going up against Virginia. Virginia, again, bad against the run. He's only 5,300, so that's pretty interesting. A mid-tier guy I like is Letty Brown going up against Texas. That game will be at home. Texas, you know, you just kind of got to wonder where their head's at this point, coming off of a game like last week. And then Ulysses Bentley, now that he's healthy, 3,800 against Cincy. It's a tough matchup. But if he goes for 15 carries and, you know, sees four or five targets here, I think that he returns a decent amount of value for you at just 3,800.
I really like Bentley if you're playing in contests that require you to roster a player named Ulysses. I think he's at the top of my list.
Oh yeah, no, he's the guy that, like, you go to the RotoWire optimizer and you first thing you do is you hit the lock button next to Ulysses.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, if you're in a Ulysses flex league. Let's look at receivers. We got four guys priced at 8K or above. Wicks, Perry, Robertson, and Jahan Dotson at the top at 8,400. Dotson, I think, has probably the highest ceiling of any player week to week. Obviously, doesn't always meet that, but we've seen some just ridiculous games from Jahan Dotson. I kind of like David Bell. I mean, I know you can gash Northwestern on the ground. I know we're not expecting a ton of points in this game. The total sits all the way down at 47.5, but I think David Bell comes close to that ceiling that you get with Dotson. And, you know, this week you're getting him for $1,100 cheaper.
Yeah, that is a really good point when it comes to Bell. And Bell did well last week without it. I don't believe even scoring a touchdown, or if he did, he just had the one. But as far as targets,
no
catches,
touchdowns, but 11 catches.
There you go. So I mean, he's definitely a safe option going up against Northwestern. I do like that call. But Dotson, to me, is someone that I'm going to try to jam into a lot of my lineups, even though he is the top build receiver. He hasn't had a game with less than 12 targets since week four, and that was a game when they played Villanova, so they obviously didn't need to pepper him with targets. But he's seen 15 or more targets in each of the last three games. I expect that to continue. There really doesn't seem to be that second option that's emerged in that Penn State receiving core. So it's the Dotson show, and you know, I'll pay the price for that at 8,400. Not surprisingly, I love the Ohio State guys, and I am surprised, however, at where they're priced at, especially after last week's explosion. Sometimes you can see an overreaction in the salaries for some of these guys, but Garrett Wilson, still just 6,800. Chris Olave, who scored in basically every game this year, down to 6,400. Jackson Smith and Jigba, the highest at 7,900. So I imagine it'll be kind of chalky to have Garrett Wilson or even Chris Olave. Like, wouldn't surprise me in a big field tournament to see Wilson's roster percentage north of 30%, but I think that's good chalk. As far as, you know, some of the more value guys are concerned, talking about that Purdue passing game, Brock Thompson, he is a Marshall transfer and he has touchdowns in back-to-back games. He's 3,100. So if you need that near min price guy, I would consider him. Xavier Worthy, obviously there's a lot of the things you could say about Texas right now, but he did have 22 targets a week ago. That's preposterous. So that kind of goes to show. And they have kind of settled their quarterback situation. It's going to be Casey Thompson this week. Him and Worthy obviously work well together. So 7,200, people are going to be off the Texas offense for the most part. Bijan Robinson's out, so they might have to throw a little bit more. Worthy's interesting. Dylan Goffney, mentioned him earlier, SMU, $3,000, so min price, 13 targets a week ago, caught eight of them. Not particularly explosive production with it, under 100 yards, but if he is going to be stepping into that role again, if SMU still has a banged up receiving core, then Goffney definitely is worth some consideration. And I think you could argue with the way that he played that he doesn't get written out of the game script here. And then dovetailing with the DJU call, Bo Collins, 4,500, and that's BEAUX, Nick Collins, 4,500, nine targets and three out of the last four, and Justin Ross is out. So I see him seeing a ton of targets this week. I think he could set his season high, and he's going up against Wake Forest, who is not particularly good defensively, as we know.
All right, so I'm feverishly Googling Bo Collins right now. He's from California?
What? He went to the same high school as DJU, John Bosco.
Really? Okay, see, I was like, this guy's a lock. Like, he definitely is from like very South Louisiana, and boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was kind of shocked by it myself, but yeah, Clemson's recruiting footprint goes far and wide.
Yeah, it sure does. This is jarring. I might need a moment. All right. Any closing thoughts? I'm currently reading tweets about Antonio Brown using a fake vaccine card. So I'm going to some catching up to do in that regard. But any final thoughts on the week 12 college football slate?
Oh, crikey. I mean, that definitely makes me want to just get back on Twitter here. But as far as this slate goes, I think it's going to be awesome. Again, just kind of driving it home. I like a couple of those passing games, and I think save as much as you can at running back to load up at some of those premium receivers, those Ohio State guys, Jahan Dotson and the like. And Phil, I'm very interested now to see what with Phil Dracovich checking in as a quarterback min price, just like how many people catch on to that, and you know how much people actually go with it. Because I mean, that usually your best value quarterback is maybe like 5,800. And even then you're kind of not expecting much, but Phil Dracovich is a legit quarterback. So excited to see that. But most of all, very, very excited for this weekend. I hope that this Ohio State Michigan State game is a little bit more competitive than the spread implies. And I'm pumped. This will be another awesome week. I'm very, very excited. And do you have any best bets that you were thinking about for this week, Nick? I have a couple lined up.
I mean, as I said before, I like Wisconsin to cover those 9 points at home. I kind of like Michigan State to hang around with Ohio State. 19 feels like too much. I think Ohio State wins this game fairly comfortably, but I do like Michigan State to cover 19, even on the road. Those are the two that I've kind of been honing in on. I mean, Alabama, I think, probably wins by more than 3 touchdowns against Arkansas. It feels like they had their one slip up, and it's going to be kind of smooth sailing, I think, for them until that inevitable meeting with Georgia. But hit me with your best bets.
So I know I was just gassing up Boston College, but I kind of like Florida State at plus 1.5 going to Boston College. Florida State gutty win over Miami last week. So maybe something starting to cook down in Tallahassee. Looking elsewhere, I like USC plus 3 against UCLA. Jackson Dart is going to be starting, the man himself, for USC. A little glimpse into the future there. I like Wyoming plus 5.5 against Utah State. Wyoming's just tough as nails to play against, even though they're going to be on the road in this one. And then I like North Texas minus 10 against Florida International. FIU is just completely falling apart. I don't know if you caught Butch Davis's comments from earlier this week, but it's like, yeah, the jerseys are 10 years old. The, you know, the facilities are falling apart. I'm leaving after this season. See you later. So that could be a team that is just in bad shape heading into Denton.
Yeah, they might be on FCS watch pretty soon here.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, with all this realignment, I mean, Conference USA right now is about as low as it gets, and FIU is kind of bottom of the barrel there.
Yeah, I don't know that Conference USA will ever recapture the, like, 2007 to 2009 glory years.
No, those days are long behind us, sir.
They sure are. All right, man, enjoy the pseudo bye week for Georgia. Hopefully it'll be smooth sailing for Wisconsin as well. I have no weddings on the calendar this week. I will finally be able to sit back, relax, throw on both TVs, have multiple games going. I won't be like scrambling to, you know, stream games while I'm hiding out in the bathroom at these events. Very much looking forward to it.
I'm very pleased for you. I mean, it's been a hell of a wedding season for you, and you've earned this.
I really have. Thank you for saying that.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.